This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, 7:45 in the morning. I'm Koo Soo Chong, joined by Tan Cheng Han, and today we're going to be talking about the Fed stress test. This is interesting because last week we had the liquidity test, which the U.S. banks passed, and then this week was the big one, the capital return tests, where the Federal Reserve also put the same U.S. banks under the same spotlight and tried to ascertain whether there was enough capital and wherewithal for the U.S. banks to return capital to shareholders. And I listened to what Mikio said, and this is interesting because over the last 8 to 9 years, we've had this huge gush of cheap liquidity flow into the system. And financial services industries or the banks essentially have had this huge run up in the share prices. And, you know, they've kind of like transmogrified to a growth stock or to a growth sector. Whereas in the past, there used to be, you know, very safe index-linked stocks where you just, you know, relied on them for predictable dividends. Very much like, say, a public bank, for example. But obviously, you know, with the last 8 years of quantitative easing, you've had people like Goldman Sachs and Bank of America and JP Morgan, they've had huge capital gains. So, but things are now changing full circle. And with this approval by this from the Federal Reserve, I think now banks are, in a way, coming back to the old real, to the old normal of being quite predictable, quite safe stocks, and being very much a dividend capital yield, a dividend income yielding counters.
At least for now, until Trump,
for now,
until maybe Trump and perhaps try to roll back at Dodd-Frank or something. You know, I think there'll be an event risk. Although, like Mikio pointed out, you know, given the kind of resistance that President Trump has faced on the policy front, you know, not getting much traction, you know, in that sense. So perhaps we have to wait and see whether or not the unwinding of certain elements of Dodd-Frank will actually be that. You know, be a boost to the banking sector. But you know, you're right. The thing this is telling here, because immediately after the Fed has said these 33 banks in the U.S., they have passed the stress test. In other words, they got enough of that capital buffer to avoid similar scenarios of that 08-09 global financial crisis there, with the exception being, I think, Capital One. Capital One is the only bank in the U.S. that has been ordered to resubmit its plans, although they can still continue with their dividends and buybacks and whatnot. And speaking of, so once the Fed has said, okay, all you 33, you're good to go, you've passed the test, so then a lot of these banks then went out and said, hey, you know, it's time for a payout for these shareholders who stuck with us, you know, all through these various tests. So even like the likes of JP Morgan, you know, the biggest bank in America, they actually announced a 90% increase in their share buybacks. So, you know, a good thing for the shareholders, really.
Yeah, it's very hard to not play into this whole conspiratorial theme where Wall Street I'm going to explain myself, right? Because, you know, this revolving door between Wall Street and the Federal Reserve, because, look, you've had the Fed stress test. All the big banks have passed with flying colors. And within basically minutes of that those approvals being issued, you've had the likes of Morgan Stanley, Wells Fargo, Bank of America, Citigroup, JP Morgan announcing big, huge increases in share buybacks, which, as we know, boosts your EPS, your earnings per share, because there's fewer shares in circulation because you bought them back and taken out of them out of the public float. Then you've also had things like the same five banks increasing dividend payouts for the going forward. In Citigroup's case, by as much as 100%, and even in the smallest case, Wells Fargo by 3%. And who does that benefit? You know, the biggest owners of the banks, right?
Right. And then also, you know, when you consider how, say, President Trump, again, is, well, there's talk of him perhaps getting more bank-friendly members, you know, from the industry onto the Fed, you know, so again, that can only feed into this notion that it's basically the right hand giving to left hand. They're all, you know, just you know, basically scratching each other's backs.
Yeah, and you know, you've also got Janet Yellen, the Federal Reserve governor, saying that banks are very much stronger, quote unquote, and another financial crisis, unquote, not likely to happen in our lifetime. And you see, the thing is, I find that I'm struggling to really see the veracity behind that statement, because in the last 20 years, the period of shock, the number of years between the financial shocks have been getting shorter and shorter. You had the 1997 Asian financial crisis, then you had the 2001 dot-com crisis, and then you had 2007-2008, the global financial crisis. You know, so there used to be 10 years between shocks, and now they seem to be getting smaller and shorter and more volatile. The 8 years since we last had the global financial crisis, or is it, I think, 8 years now,
2008,
It is, you know, it's knocking its head on the ceiling in terms of the longest period it's ever gone without a financial shock. And we've got the Federal Reserve governor saying that not likely to happen in our lifetime, which I struggle to see because, okay, because so many factors, right? So many potential black swans on the horizon. For example, the U.S. national debt, $20 trillion, you know, at least 25% of which has been added to in the last 8 years because of financial quantitative easing. Mm. I struggle to see how much longer they can keep printing money.
Ah, okay, right. I get your point there. I think you're focusing on the likelihood of another financial crisis being around the corner. Yeah,
yeah, okay.
But when it comes to the banks, I was speaking more about the banks. I apologize there. But with the banks, at least given the kind of regulations and the kind of tests that we're seeing, not just with U.S. banks, but as Mikko pointed out, it is a global phenomenon. I think here, even in Malaysia, you know, it's not just like the Basel III requirements, but also, say, this MFRS 9. I know we're getting a bit technical here, and it's the auditors and accountants, you know, who actually kind of know what's going on, because I don't really know what that means. But I just know that there have been more stringent, asks by regulators on banks. So perhaps, you know, even if the financial crisis is around the corner, hopefully with these stress tests, with these heightened regulations, with these higher requirements, you know, these banks, being a proxy to the economy, will be able to withstand better the next financial crisis, whenever that may be.
Well, hopefully, because, you know, as we've been talking in the news on BFM the last few days, the central bankers have been meeting and, you know, talking and speaking to the media this past few days. I think Fed Chair Yellen was in London yesterday. Mm. And in a concerted voice, central bankers around the world saying that, you know, they're issuing hawkish comments and saying that this period of easy money and cheap cash will be over soon. And the U.S. of course has been on a rate tightening curve the last, last 6 months of the year. They really raised rates twice this year, potentially one, if not two more, by the end of this year. So there's a normalization pattern going on in the world. And what's it going to do to weak economies, which are teetering on the edge of oblivion? For example, in the U.S., where not every household has got, you know, huge disposable income and jobs, basically. Mm. Can they withstand an increase in borrowing costs? Because a lot of them are leveraged to the hilt. You know, we talk about Australia being 123% Australian household debt to GDP ratios being at 123% of GDP. In Malaysia, household debt to GDP ratio 89%, very, very high. If you start raising costs and your monthly commitments keep going up, can you make it out on the other side? It's, you know, but debatable.
Okay, well, yeah, certainly. And here's the counterpoint there, because if you look at, say, some other hard economic data, just last night, they got the third and final reading on the first quarter GDP figure. It was revised.
Did you say China?
US.
Okay.
Oh, sorry. US GDP figure.
1.4%, right?
Yeah, but 1.4%.
That's not a huge print.
But for the US, you know, it's 0.2 percentage points higher, right? 20 basis points higher from the previous revision. You got that. Unemployment, you know, numbers have been at level 17-year
low. Was initially printed at over 3%, and then they dialed it back on the revision, yeah? So to 1.2.
Yeah.
So for a big economy that is supposedly in the throes of a huge economic recovery, 1.2% seems a bit anomalous.
Okay, well, you got that. Then say your unemployment, like the slack in the labor market is pretty much gone. I think we've got non-farm payrolls coming up pretty soon.
Official unemployment somewhere around 6%, but right, then you don't count the 80 million Americans who are not even on the roll. I mean, they've just decided to fall off the register.
Well, okay, well, fine. So there'll be dark figures here and there. But if you're going to use this notion that the Fed remains data dependent, they are seeing these hard economic data. You know, okay, fine. To be fair, inflation has come below expectations, but there are plenty of signals that shows that this recovery is very much on track. And obviously, when we're looking at the banks, there are plenty of signals that they have turned a corner as well. And again, I mean, I'm not saying this is a fail-proof plan, but you know, I think the signs are there that, you know, we have turned a corner here.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.